having a great time, enjoying it as much as we are. Now that it is Friday, 5 p.m. time for American Hit Radio, we'll take a break from all this holiday music and such that's been basically inundating us over the airwaves, and we'll try something a little bit different here. Not for us, since what we've been doing now for three solid months. We're going to return to our How Music Changed series dedicated to the Kinks. And this would be part 13 in this series. Amazing, 13 parts, Heidi, and we're only up to 1967. Pretty incredible.
Unbelievable.
I do want to be complete.
You got to just take your time with this.
I didn't think that I like basically dwelled too long on anything that I shouldn't have or got too deep into boring sections. I mean, I am trying to be a completist in a sense by playing as much of the Kinks music as I'm aware of. Without being redundant. I don't need to play 18 versions of the same song, for example, if there's different mixes.
Just two versions of the same song.
Sometimes that, or if there's a BBC recording that is, I think is worthwhile, I might go there. But even with me basically trying to hold back, here we are, like, you know, just up to 1967 for part 13. Now, last week we covered the first half of the Kinks album, Something Else, their fifth studio album in the United Kingdom, which was released in September of 1967. And the album sold incredibly poorly in both Great Britain and here in America, probably because at a time when most bands were including extended jams and Rococo instrumentation and oddball lyricism, the Kinks went in another direction entirely, celebrating England, really, on the album in all of its ways and customs. And with this show, we pick up exactly where we left off and complete the album. We'll play the balance of the album, Something Else, today. Maybe if we have time, we'll add in a few relevant 9LP tracks from the same era. Now, we're pointing out the Britishness of the album, and I think very few things would qualify as being more British than Afternoon Tea.
Tea time won't be the same without Madonna. At night, I lie awake and dream of Madonna. I think about that small cafe. That's where we used to meet each day. And then we
I take afternoon tea.
system that is thoroughly
unknown to you.
Well, yeah, what American ever has ever had afternoon tea? And yet, you know, what Englishman, you know, has ever gone without having afternoon tea?
No, we're definitely decidedly a coffee culture.
Definitely. Well, Great Britain quite certainly goes in the other direction. As I said, that's the part of the English bent of the album Something Else, which was released right in the middle of the Summer of Love by the Kinks. Now, we had mentioned last week, reading from Dave Davies' novel Kink, he had mentioned how he had decided almost like in a sporadic manner to get married. And what's really weird is if you read the book, after he talks about getting married, you pretty much turn the page like 3 pages later, and he's talking about having angry feelings about an old girlfriend that he fell out with. Like, for example, I was still so angry inside because I thought she never really loved me. I could never understand how she could suddenly not love me. Love me till the sun shines was about those feelings. So now he's writing about this ex.
About another girl.
Right. He goes on to say, Funny Face was a song about my feelings about my ex-girlfriend Sue. Many times during my life, thoughts and feelings about her would rise to the surface to plague or torment me. Unresolved emotions about a love that was never meant to be. Here is that song called Funny Face.
There's no more chicks left where the green grows. I just cut licks in all the clubs I know. And our labor's in, I have no place to go. You're on a yacht near an island in Greece. Though you are hot, forget me not, for I will keep waiting until your return. Now you are gone, end of the season. Any day. Back in the scrub on a wet afternoon, down in the mud, dreaming of flowers in June. End of the
song by Ray, a song that sounds as if it almost could have been written for Frank Sinatra, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely like an old black and white movie.
Yeah, no doubt. It's got that, you know, very classic feel to it. Now, one of the reasons for all the quirky aspects of the songs that are on Something Else by the Kinks is due almost entirely to the absence of the band's producer, Shel Talmy. He was working with the band, but Ray started to work and do his own production on this album, mostly because he had freedom and because he was uncomfortable at this point with the input of not being able to do exactly what he wanted, which is the reason why we have songs like No Return, a bossa nova tune, or The Oddness of Harry Rag, or that Tin Soldier Man, and or even Lazy Old Sun, all those songs we played last week, but they're all decidedly odd tunes. Now, Ray gets a little bit into the details of that. Now, we played the entire album, Something Else, between last week and this week with the songs we just played, except for one, the song that ends the album. And in a way, it sums up the entire album, including what Ray, how Ray feels about it. So I'm going to read this from Ray's book called X-Ray, The Unauthorized Autobiography. He picks up the story at from earlier shows. If you've been listening to each of the shows, a couple shows back, we had mentioned that Pete Quaife had been injured in a car accident and had decided that he was going to leave the band to get married. And he had stepped out for a while, and they had gotten a replacement bass player. And that's exactly where Ray picks up the story. Pete Quaife had returned to England with his wife, Annette, and for reasons best known to himself, had asked to rejoin the group. John Dalton, his replacement playing bass in the band, was very disappointed, but accepted it in a good-natured way, knowing full well that it meant a return to the building site and playing in the local pub at weekends. This didn't go unnoticed by the gutter press, who took pictures of poor Nobby on a building site holding a guitar in one hand and a shovel in the other. Quaife, however, had resigned from the Kinks company once, so, on the advice of Grenville and Robert, our managers, we took him back on a trial basis. Pete was in the habit of changing his mind overnight. As a teenager, I had stood on Waterloo Bridge and watched the high tide nearly flood the bank of the Thames. The water was a bright brown, almost red. This was probably caused by pollution, but it gave the impression that the water was like blood flowing through a giant vein that led to the pumping heart of the empire. I felt that there was a bigger tide coming that would completely flood the banks and submerge the Houses of Parliament. This was a tide of reality and change that was soon to turn England on its head. I started writing a song about Liverpool that implied that the era of Merseybeat was coming to an end. But I changed it to Waterloo Sunset, not only because that gave me a bigger canvas to work on, but because it was about London, the place where I had actually grown up. We tried recording the song with Shell, Tell Me, but I felt so precious about it that I pretended that it was an experiment for an album track, which had not worked. We played the backtrack a couple of times, but gave up before anybody had a chance to hear the melody or lyrics properly. Face to Face was released, and now I felt that the group was ready for something special. I knew that I had to make my own version, and so, in early April, I went back into the studio and laid down the backtrack. I remained so secretive about Waterloo Sunset that I would not even sing the lyrics while the band played. I went home and polished up the lyrics until they became like a pebble which had been rounded off by the sea until it was perfectly smooth. A week later, I went into the studio with Dave for a couple of hours to put on his guitar part, which I had carefully prearranged in my plodding piano style at home. On April 13, I took Rasa, Pete, and Dave into Number 2 studio at Pi, and we stood round the microphone and put on our backing vocals. I still didn't tell them what the lyrics would be about, simply because I was embarrassed by how personal they were, and I thought that the others would burst out laughing when they heard me sing. It was like an extract from a diary nobody was allowed to read. But when I finally put the vocal on later that evening, everything seemed to fit, and nobody laughed. It was not difficult to mix the record because it was only recorded on a four-track machine. The engineer, Alan McKenzie, was sensitive enough to realize how much the song meant to me and allowed me to push the faders myself. It was like painting with sound. After the song was mixed, I had an acetate cut, and I took it home to play to Rosie and my niece, Jackie. Rosie had come back from Australia for a visit, and although she was staying with my mother, she visited me almost every night to make up for all the time we had been apart. I thought that she would get a kick out of hearing Terry's name used as one of the two characters in the song. Terry meets my imaginary Julie on Waterloo Bridge, and as they walk across the river, darkness falls and an innocent world disappears. Even when the record was finished, it was still like a secret, and for a while I didn't want it to be released. I met Barry Fantoni when we were both playing a charity soccer match for the Melody Maker. When he asked me what the title of my new record was, rather than tell him, I said that I had forgotten. When the record was released on May 5th, Penny Valentine, the record reviewer for the Disc Music paper, phoned Robert and Grenville to say that it was the best record I would ever make. Well, what I've got here, actually, is a session excerpt of the Kinks recording the song exactly as Ray said. You hear them coming along with an arrangement with no vocals at all. Here is a session excerpt, then, of the band preparing Waterloo Sunset.
Take two.
Alan, don't worry if I fade away with this guitar in parts. It's intentional.
Okay, Roger. Cover.
The mistake is intentional. Right. Lots of guts. But try not to speed up. Thank you.
it seems to me almost amazing. That song is beautiful even without the lyrics.
I know, right?
You know, it's still compelling. But Ray was really, you know, insecure. But you can hear, it's a track like that that shows just how different the Kinks were from what was happening in the summer of 67. They're recording songs that are sentimental and nostalgic, for, you know, basically longing for a time when England was more innocent and everybody else was looking forward at space age and stuff like that. Ray wasn't remotely interested in that. But he wasn't really comfortable with production. As he said himself, you know, he just felt unsure of his skill for mixing and recording. And one of his later comments was, "I feel that I shouldn't have been allowed to produce something else. What went into an album required someone whose approach was a little bit more mundane." However, the rest of the band necessarily didn't think so. They seemed to love what Ray was doing. Here's what Dave had written about this point in time. Again, taken from his book, Kink. "Ray was working on a new song and he played part of it for me. It was incomplete and needed a bridge, but immediately we started ad-libbing vocal parts around the chorus. I had a feeling that it was going to be a hit. The song became Waterloo Sunset. Like Sunny Afternoon, it had a wonderfully hypnotic descending bass line, contrasting magically with rising vocal harmonies, gentle but stirring textures. In fact, if it had been recorded then and there with just a piano and acoustic guitar, it would have been perfect. When we eventually got into the studio, we realized that after all the vocals had been laid in, it still needed something. We messed around with various guitar ideas and sounds before we finally tried working the guitar part through a tape delay. It was almost like a 50s-type triplet delay. It worked like a dream, and the recording was complete. Waterloo Sunset was released in May and became a massive hit for us in England. What was unfortunate is that it also was released before the album Something Else. So, with two hits from the album, Waterloo Sunset and Death of a Clown, and that's not to mention David Watts, amazingly great songs. They were mostly released before the album came out. So when the album came out, it didn't really sell because people already may have bought the singles to make them hits. So the album basically ended up becoming a flop in Great Britain and in the United States, sadly, where it was unheard, most likely due to the fact that there was a U.S. ban on live performances and even appearances on television in America. So the Kinks were a non-entity, which allowed a song as beautiful as this to basically slip by unnoticed. Here is the released version of Waterloo Sunset.
Every day I look at the world from my window.
is one of the now deemed as one of the masterpieces of Ray Davies from the album, ending the album, Something Else by the Kinks. Well, one thing about that album is that it had an extraordinary number of other tracks that were written at the same time. A lot of them were being held back because Ray already had this idea in his head about wanting to record an album about a Village Green. Again, a totally English idea that he was not compelled to want to change because he wasn't going to America anyway. I think it might have been just because of that. While the Rolling Stones and the Beatles had so much experience in the United States, Ray's experience with our country was in the past, in his mind, and that wasn't influencing him at all. So he just turned things to what he knew, and since he was spending most of his time, almost all of his time, in England, most of his themes and ideas were coming from his surroundings, naturally enough. So it's sort of a self-fulfilled prophecy in that sense. But as he says here, again, reading from his unauthorized autobiography, at the same sessions as Waterloo Sunset, the Kinks had also recorded a ridiculously camp tune called Mr. Pleasant, about a man who's kind to everybody on the exterior but doesn't realize the pitfalls and traps involved in being superficially happy because Mr. Pleasant is having an affair. For some reason, Mr. Pleasant was released in Holland and went straight to number one, with Waterloo Sunset at number two. Perhaps that was a problem for many people. I was two people at once, a romantic with strong ideals on one hand and at the same time a cruel observer with no mercy. It was released as a single in the United States, as Ray said, not in the UK, and unfortunately not a particularly big hit in the United States, though, either. Here is Mr. Pleasant.
Oh, Mr. Pleasant. So much easier, life is easier now. Oh, Mr. Pleasant, how is Mrs. Pleasant? Did you know she was hurt?
That awesome piano on that track. That's Nicky Hopkins, same guy who was playing on a whole bunch of Rolling Stones tracks around this time. A genuine session man who seemed to also, though, be a mate to the people that he played with all the time. Now, here this is coming out as a single, and Billboard magazine predicted that the song was going to skyrocket the group back up to the top of the Hot 100. And instead, the song stalled at number 80. And it sort of signaled like a bit of a warning sign again for the Kinks that they were in for some a dry spell here in America. Meanwhile, I mentioned that there were an awful lot of other tracks that were recorded for the Something Else album that didn't make it. Here's one of those tracks that wasn't heard until years later. I think it was the late 90s when they started issuing the album with bonus tracks. And here's one of those bonus tracks called Act Nice and Gentle. Song called Act Nice and Gentle. What's amazing about this is that a lot of the outtakes from this era, songs which never saw the light of day, are great. They're like genuinely like wow, these are as good as the album tracks. Here's another one that Dave talks about. Ray had a song hanging around from the Something Else sessions called My Street. It was a nice song, but we were looking for something really special as a single. So we messed around with it a bit, then played it backwards, and out came the inspiration for Autumn Almanac. The middle section of Almanac is the original version of My Street played in reverse. I think it worked out beautifully. Interestingly, like we said, the song Mr. Pleasant, which we just played a couple songs ago, was not released as a single in Great Britain. So what they did was, in England, they released Autumn Almanac as the single for Great Britain and put Mr. Pleasant on its B-side. And nevertheless, here it is then. Here's Autumn Almanac.
From the dew-soaked hedge creeps a curly caterpillar. summer's all gone. La la la.
It's songs like that that in America caused the album Kinks Chronicles to eventually be an essential buy, something you needed to buy if you were a fan of the Kinks, in like say the early 70s when it came out, because it was full of songs that were not on albums that were great, like that song, Autumn Almanac. Dave talks about yet another one. Well, talking about that song, he says the single was released in October and Autumn Almanac became a top three hit in England. Later in November, I played around with some blues licks a la Leadbelly and came up with a chromatic riff that formed the basis of Susanna's Still Alive. Now, get this, the name Susanna. Yet another song.
Referencing his ex.
His ex-girlfriend, Sue. Because it was recorded and released as my second single. Here is Susanna Still Alive.
She's waiting for a soldier to come home, but she'll cry and never die. Oh, Susanna's gonna cry.
know, I think, Heidi, of all the shows that we've done so far, this is 13. And I thought all of them were really great and fun and interesting. But I think this is the most consistent of the bunch, where every song seems to basically
really... they just kind of jump out at you. Well, you know, sometimes it takes songwriters a little bit of time to hit their stride.
Well, I mean, everybody's got a peak, you know, a time when they hit a peak. And this is apparently, like, you know, Ray's first peak, or maybe what a lot of people refer to as the band's classic era. And any show that features Waterloo Sunset is bound to be pretty special.
Yes.
Now, continuing a look then at some of the songs that did not make the album. Here's Ray's position at this point in time. The group had been restored to its position as one of the most consistent chart bands in Britain. And even though the Musicians Union ban was still in force in the United States, Sunny Afternoon had become a top 10 hit over there. They may have been able to stop us touring, but they couldn't stop us making records. Yet. My publishing royalties were still in dispute, and my writer's earnings frozen until the outcome of the management court case. I felt grateful for just being allowed to continue to write songs. I had achieved everything I set out to do creatively, and I was 22 years old. Perhaps the money would arrive before I collected my pension. You've got to understand that I never manipulate situations to achieve artistic ends. I try my utmost to depersonalize what I write, but sometimes things stay in the subconscious, and you have to bring them, too, to the surface. It was then that I really began to become afraid regularly. It seemed that the lawsuits would go on forever. One night, out of sheer desperation, I took a large bottle of vodka, finished it all, while I wrote the lyrics to a song. Vodka seemed to bring out something macho in me. After writing the lyrics, I realized I wanted a son. I staggered up to bed. The song was called Wonder Boy. Wonder Boy would be like a parting gift to a kind soul and to friendship, something to be treasured. I'd reached the point where even though I knew that Wonder Boy would not be a gigantic hit, I was more concerned with what I had written than with what it had sold. I think the record died in the 20s, but my manager Grenville said that someone had seen John Lennon in a club, and he kept on asking the disc jockey to play Wonder Boy over and over again. I guess that approval from my peers meant that Wonder Boy had not been a complete mistake. Sometimes when you write inside yourself, you have no idea whether you are sane or not. When the rest of the world acknowledges your work, somehow they condone your insanity. In the case of Wonder Boy, it felt that the people who bought the record had not understood my own little subtext. They were buying a Kinks record. To me, it was a cry for help. Later, the full impact of what was happening finally hit me. Here is that song that caused such consternation to Ray that is, for everybody else, an immensely happy and fun song to listen to, Wonder Boy.
La, la, la.
Everybody. see you and you see me, and ain't that wonder? Wonderful, some mother's son, turn your sorrow into wonder. Dream alone, go have your fun. Life is lonely.
Wow, when you start a series dedicated to the music of the Kinks, like we did 13 weeks ago, I knew I was going to want to get in-depth, and I knew it was going to end up taking a certain amount of time for me to cover it properly. Now that I'm in the middle of it, I'm sort of overwhelmed that I would feel really bad about it if I was going to be covering the Kinks and not playing these rare songs, the ones that would be rare here, because they're just so great. They really can't be overlooked. For that reason, I'm going to point out that next week, when we come back for part 14, we're going to be dedicating a large part of next week's show to some very rare Kinks songs that that really, I don't know if very many Kinks fans even know them, and we'll go into that for a while. Maybe some BBC tracks as well, before we finally begin to start to cover their following album, The Kinks Are the Village Green Preservation Society. That's the direction where we are headed. So I hope you stay tuned for these upcoming shows, because I promise you...
I will.
There will be no lapse in quality, I promise. And Heidi can assure you of that. Meanwhile, I want to wish everybody a fabulous holiday season. I hope you enjoy it. Happy New Year to everyone. We will see you next in the year 2018, I believe it is. Is that what follows this year?
Oh, my goodness.
So here we go. Hope you're prepared for it. Have a great time. Be safe, please. And be ready to come back and tune into our show on Wednesday and Friday at 5 p.m. Meanwhile, we're going to leave you with two more songs from the sessions for Something Else that ended up as outtakes, only to later on become bonus tracks or appeared on a variety of collection albums. First, we'll hear Polly, and we'll follow that by Lincoln County. Take care, everybody. We will see you next week. Happy New Year.
Polly wouldn't listen to her mama. Polly wouldn't listen to her papa. Tried to make the swing city sing, and now there's not a place that Polly hasn't been. A letter to her mama. Polly made confession to her papa. Mommy's proud 'cause Polly's still in chain. She's happy now her baby's coming home again.
She Polly, she learned that life was just a game. She was sorry, she just had to break the chains.
But mama knows 'cause mama was the same.
Oh,
stay.